Welcome to Blueprints of Disruption, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the grassroots. I'm your host, Jessa McLean. As most of you might know, the NDP is currently without a leader. One could argue they've been without one for years, but that's a different episode altogether, one we've probably done here on Blueprints. Let's be honest, it's no secret there's no love lost between me and the NDP, but that didn't dampen my interest in speaking with our next guest about their recent announcement that they would be running for leader of the party. Eve Ongler, journalist, author, and activist, is no stranger to politics, but if he's approved, and that is a big if, this will be new territory for him. To describe him as an unconventional politician would be an understatement. The very reasons that have made Eve a great guest on our show are the very things the NDP has tried to distance themselves from. As you'll hear, he's not naive to this at all, nor does he seem daunted by the impending shit show that has accompanied NDP leadership races of late. He makes clear his intentions behind running. There are a handful of issues really at the core of his campaign, and if nothing else, he feels he can make an impact on those. If you've been listening to the show lately, you'll hear similarities between Eve's goals and those of, say, the Revolution Party of Canada, who we interviewed a few weeks ago. People just doing whatever they can to widen the political spectrum that is Canadian politics from within. As we've said before, we'll never know which tactics will work until we try them. We'll never know what pressures will lead to the final break. But we do know that we've got to do whatever we can. We platform all kinds of activists, organizers, journalists, and I guess now even the odd politician, so that you can draw from whatever lessons you need to choose, or maybe change, your path of resistance. Our hope is that you simply just keep resisting. And maybe share our content so we can reach more folks. Now let's get to what you tuned in for. Okay, Eve Ongler is back in the studio. I've lost track of how many times you've joined us at Blueprints. I am so excited to discuss this with you. Normally, I lean on all your expertise, foreign policy. We've had you on to talk about the pressures you're creating around Palestine and our politicians. And now we have Eve on to talk about his recent announcement that he will run for leader of the NDP. I think one of the replies I had on Twitter there was, holy crap. And lots of questions came pouring in because a lot of people are like in this gray zone of, can I ever vote for the NDP again? And then they see you. And I think, you know, some people I never thought I would see talking about taking out a membership are asking, you know, how can they volunteer for this campaign? So you have definitely stirred the hornet's nest, Eve. What made you decide to do this now?
Well, basically, I was asked by the Socialist Caucus. I'll be honest with you, it wasn't on my radar whatsoever until I was asked, what is it, about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, about representing or being the candidate of the Socialist Caucus. And my initial reaction was, no, I mean, I just wasn't on my radar. It's not, you know, I'm doing lots of stuff.
I was going to say, you must be busy.
I have two young children. You know, there's obviously more than enough work, just, you know, full time doing combat or challenging Canada's complicity in the genocide in Gaza. Right. So, but then when I started thinking about a bit more, there's kind of two issues that I think that I'm, I guess, uniquely placed to raise that are really present. Now, obviously, Canada's support for the Holocaust in Gaza is something I know I've been doing lots of stuff on over the past 20 months. And, you know, the NDP's gotten a little bit better on that issue. But in fact, if you actually sort of understand the issue fully, they're still actually not very good on that issue. So there's, I think, a need to, you know, push further you know, well, on that issue in general, but then specifically even in kind of NDP circles. But it's actually not that issue that I would say is the one that really sort of crystallized kind of saying, hey, you know what, I should do this. It's the military spending issue. You know, this is unprecedented how much increased military spending, you know, since World War II that Carney has committed to just, I mean, it's $1 trillion over the next decade. The best case scenario is it's just, leads to slashing of social programs. It leads to boosting this authoritarian, racist, patriarchal institution. That's the best case scenario. The worst case scenario is that as we've seen with these monsters who've been enabling the genocide in Gaza, that it gives them greater means, be it Carney, be it Poilievre, be it other future prime ministers or whatever, to unleash violence globally. So that's what we're doing. We're putting this incredible amount of resources into the military, and the NDP can't respond to this really. I mean, they put out a statement, it's actually hilarious, I guess it's about a week ago, 10 days ago, about the 5% of GDP on the military. And the statement headline, I don't have it right in front of me, but is NDP says no to 5% GDP on the military, which that would be good. That's good. But then the first 11 lines of the statement are pro-military. And then even saying that they criticize the liberals and the conservatives for not having followed NATO commitments in the past. So they're sort of implying that if it was an NDP, we would have hit the 2% of GDP, the previous NATO target of 2%. But they're not really saying that directly. But you could also read it to saying that totally contradicting the headline, which is no to the 5% NATO target. And so a totally contradictory statement. Some of it's okay-ish and some of it's just horrible.
They campaigned on increasing military spending, right? And didn't get much blowback from anyone. That was tough to hear four candidates, really, talk about increasing military spending, RCMP spending, and strengthening the border, which gave so much space for Carney to do this after, right? He doesn't just have a mandate from conservatives. He pretty much got a green light from the progressive wing of Canadian politics as well during the campaign. So I get you being skeptical on the NDP being able to be any force of opposition on this matter.
So I think basically the picture is they boxed themselves in by supporting the NATO, specifically NATO proxy war in Ukraine, but supporting a pro-Washington foreign policy from China to Iran. Even, the recent statements on Iran were a little bit less bad than all the stuff Heather McPherson's been doing for many years. And what I see coming here is that over the next couple months, we're going to start seeing Public Service Alliance of Canada, QP, Council of Canadians, other kind of more like mainstreamy kind of left organizations start realizing that wow, this NATO thing is actually quite a threat to us. It's not that NATO's a threat to people all around the world, which has long been, and the NDP support all its wars, but that there's actually start realizing that this is going to be a threat to Canadian social programs. And we're talking about a major transfer from social entitlements. And the Globe and Mail editorial board and Carney's even starting to talk about this stuff to the military machine. I'm honest about what I know, and I'm honest about what I don't know. I don't think there's anyone else as well placed with the knowledge and the credibility on those two issues to hammer away at Canada's complicity in the genocide in Gaza, and the military question, which are obviously somewhat interrelated as well. So that's what kind of pushed me forward to finally say, I'll do this. I only became an NDP member a few weeks ago when I started thinking about this. I had been an NDP member in the past. I have voted for the NDP in the past. It's always, well, maybe not always, maybe the first time I voted for the NDP it wasn't, but in recent decades or recent years, it's not with any illusions about what the NDP is. I'm not, I see the realistic success here is using this space to push the debate away from sort of the mushy middle towards, bringing forward stuff about anti-capitalism, about eco-socialism, about decolonization, land back, about you know, these kind of issues, and but principally on the Palestine Gaza question and the military spending.
I hear you on those two policies, and I get why they're prioritized. The problem with the NDP, as you know, so this is, and the audience knows, I'm just repeating it for the question's sake, the problem goes well beyond some of their bad takes on policies. It goes to how it's structured and their hostility towards, frankly, people like you and me, right? So, like, we've seen so many examples, like Sarah Jama is probably the most notable, it's freshest in most people's minds, but we've seen, you know, other attempts at having, I would consider you a grassroots candidate, right? Everything everyone was hoping for, because nobody trusts any of the politicians in general right now, especially people who've been advocating for Palestine. We've been so let down that I think finding somebody from outside of those circles is a smart idea. But do you have any idea on what you would tell people or that are asking about the way that party is run and the way that it has suppressed voices like yours in the past? Democratization is a word that some people are using, or the decentralization, a deferring back to members as opposed to the consultant class that's currently running the party.
Yeah, no, I mean, I obviously agree that it's, there's a, obviously the, there's a major contradiction between sort of suggesting you're a party of social movements, of activism and this stuff, and then being clearly quite hostile to social movements and activism. And you know, in the really egregious examples of Sarah Jama, you know, really right in front of your face. But there's, you know, how many candidates over the past decade have been blocked from running, in after even some cases being nominated by writing associations and then being blocked from representing because they had criticized Israel. So, you know, that was the question that was asked. The Toronto Star reporter today at the press conference asked, do you expect them to block your candidacy? Obviously, they did that, you know, flagrantly with Angelia in BC, was that two or three years ago, when she looked like she was going to win the BC NDP leadership.
I missed your presser. What'd you say?
I said they shouldn't block it if they believe that we have democracy in the party and they want to, you know, enlarge the tent and stuff like that, and they supposed to speak tied to social movements or the like, that they should, you know, if members vote against, you know, fine, good, whatever, right? I really don't know. I mean, talking to people at the Socialist Caucus about, well, how are they going to block you? I think they're obviously setting up. The intelligent way of blocking is to have a high entrance fee. So you just try to exclude people who are not from the sort of party establishment by charging $100,000 or whatever you have to raise that kind of money. That's the sort of smart way. We have already seen, like, quickly the pro-Israel forces, the extremist pro-Israel forces are going, like, completely losing themselves online about this. I don't expect, there's obviously, if this gets any traction, there's going to be a huge push from pro-Israel forces to have me barred from running. And obviously within the NDP leadership, they don't want me to run. So there would be, you know, two different forces there, that obvious forces that would just want to stop this. Apparently yesterday at the council brought forward a plan for the leadership race and it was rejected, 55-45, which is, according to a Socialist Caucus, that's a kind of an unprecedented opposition. So there's clearly divisions within the hierarchy of the NDP. And I don't know how that impacts the response and their ability even to bar me from running. But yeah, I'm going to proceed as if the campaign is happening. That they'll have whatever financial bars to try to exclude. But we'll deal with that question when we know what the specifics are. And it's obviously the lack of democracy within the party is fundamental. I don't think it is just a party problem. I think it is a much more broad problem in our society and political culture, in terms of we don't have structures in place designed to enable participation, and we don't want the whole structures of our society are to tell people not to go to demonstrations, tell people not to have empathy with others, not to pay attention to issues, and leave it in the hands of the quote unquote experts or the quote unquote bosses or whatnot. But so I think it's a much deeper issue, and it gets to the whole question. And this is one thing, I'm obviously the foreign policy issues are what I have focused my time and energy on in the last decades. But I do also really believe that we need to replace capitalism with economic democracy. We need to have not just democracy in the so-called political arena, but it has to be throughout the economic arena. And we need to be pushing those ideas, and there should be a debate about that within left circles, within NDP circles. I don't want anyone to take my candidacy. And I don't know why anyone would, but to take my candidacy as some sort of like endorsement of the NDP as some sort of progressive institution. I do have to say on that notion of like a lot of people talk about setting up a new party. I was in Oslo about 6 weeks ago, and there's this new left-wing party that was established because all the parties, the former left-wing parties, had supported the NATO proxy war, and it was basically set up, and they finally got the number of registrations. It took like 6 months or a year to get the number of registrations to become a formal party. So the other left-wing parties supported NATO proxy war, and some had left the party. And they were all excited when was there. They just had some big success with this ad campaign about putting money, instead of putting money more into the NATO proxy war, put it into social programs. But their goal, they have a serious proportional representation model in Norway, and their goal was still to get one elected. They hope maybe a bit more, but really was to get one person elected. So that's with a proper proportional representation system. We don't have that. So like, I don't see that alternative of like, let's set up another, anti-NATO party, which people have like, raised to me, or anti-capitalist, anti-NATO party. It's just the possibility of electoral success is at least in the medium term, virtually nil. I don't really see that model. So I haven't spent time working through NDP structures. I haven't done that.
I have, so we're going to go back.
But I do basically agree with the Socialist Caucus, or as I understand the Socialist Caucus's position on this, which is that it exists as an institution. It's an avenue of political struggle. It's got major problems. But what's the alternative in terms of like the party structure? I don't really see that. So that's something I've considered for a long time. And like I said, when I was in Norway and talking to some people, even again with this deep proportional representation system they have, their hope was just one elected official. And so I don't see any shot at that in the short or medium term with the alternative left party in Canada.
I think most people would understand that. I mean, I even interviewed the Revolution Party of Canada. So they fed up with what was available to them, did start a new party. But, they described it as a bit of chaos. They're not even registered yet. So, like, there is a lot of growing pains involved. And that is, again, without electoral reform. So I get that. I get that. I do want to go back to, because you covered a lot, Eve, so I'm going to like kind of, we'll unpack it a little bit together. You name dropped Heather McPherson there just briefly. We were talking about foreign policy, and that is her jam, right? But she was given that high profile position for a reason. She is the anointed one, right? It's not official, but that's what I'm telling you. She's the one that they want. And when I say they, I'm kind of referring to Central, to the consultant, and Lucy Watson is the national director. So she gets to vet all candidates for leadership. She did that with the Ontario NDP, And although a lot of people don't know about it, it ended up like the BC NDP leadership race as well. So a lot of folks weren't openly rejected, publicly rejected, but they were given such a hard time by Lucy Watson and shifting goalposts and discouragement from within inside the establishment. I mean, like, that doesn't impact you as much as it would an existing MPP who needs to kind of still get along, right? You could totally go in there and blow the doors open. But various pressures were put on people until they all dropped out or were told they couldn't qualify. And that's like, there's one key holder there and she's moved to the federal party. You know, this is the same person who kicked me out for allegedly harassing people online. So like holding people accountable. Eve, I don't even come close to touching your level of holding people accountable. We won't call it harassment because there's things attached to that. But and also for anti-Semitism, because I used a cartoon that had previously been used in a meme that was anti-Semitic. The language had all been changed, but it was centered around me running for party president. And so every tool at their disposal came out to disqualify anybody, not just me, but anybody who was a threat to their standing order. I'm telling you, they will do everything and anything possible to block you. Most people don't have lawyers at their disposal to kind of challenge it because they often don't even go with their own constitution. I like to see federal counsel pushing back. That is unusual. That is, Socialist Caucus is right. That's very unusual. That's a sign that folks are, they're trying to push through leadership rules that will limit participation and members are pushing back against it, right? Right now it's like a pretty low threshold for fundraising, but they want to raise that. Like they vocally set placed seeds in the media, right, that they want that increased. Another tool that they might use is they've got Nathan Cullen talking to the media, and he's saying that the NDP doesn't have time for a leadership race. This party that is in demise, in free fall, they don't think that there's time for a race. You want to comment on that? Because that's like the latest kind of maybe delay tactic, that they'll sit with Dawn as long as possible, or really challenge their constitution and actually appoint somebody. But what do you say to Nathan Cullen, who says there's no time for an NDP leadership race right now?
Well, that seems, you know, pretty absurd. I mean, you would think you'd want to try to rejuvenate the party and rejuvenate grassroots participation. But they seem to be kind of failing on that because they're also not able to force through their rules on the leadership race. So it's just the time is kind of moving forward, and the strategy there, of course, is to keep it in the hands of the consultant class and the anointed one, or Heather McPherson. I'll say that with regards to Heather McPherson, I mean, I plan to be I really go at hard on her. She's on the NATO Parliamentary Association of Canada. She's one of two NDP MPs there, which is pretty egregious. And you know, Jean Chrétien takes a more progressive position on NATO's role in Ukraine than she does. Yeah, I you know, in terms of whether they'll block me, I don't. I mean, I'll be honest. I didn't want to say that at the press conference because you don't want to give them the out. I expect to be blocked, of course, but how that will play itself out, and if you know, if there's enough dissent within the establishment, which appears to be right now, maybe, you know, who would even make the decision right now to block me before there's an actual formal race taking place? So I see a scenario where the really extremist anti-Palestinians whip themselves up into such a frenzy. Like there's people out on Twitter saying that the NDP should be a banned terrorist organization if I became the leader. And so they're whipping themselves up, and then that even forces the, you know, more kind of mainstream and maybe a bit more sober-minded CJA to come out and start demanding that I'm barred from running. But who makes that decision before there's actual race? I don't know.
They can't. You have to submit a vetting package. They'll design a package for you to fill out once the rules are set. And then that's the only time they could. One trick they might try is your relatively new membership. So an amendment that required somebody have months of a membership to qualify, or worse, you know, like it might sound like a flippant amendment that nobody really challenges, but it would be directly to block you, or criteria on internet language. Honest to God, the amount of monitoring that they've done of their own members is astonishing. So their idea of harassment is basically using really tough language with people in power. So I imagine, like, be prepared to go on those fronts. But I'm happy to see this play out in the public either way. Like, I'm sorry if they put you through hell, Eve. I appreciate that you're expecting it. And I don't think you're going to be terribly daunted by it. But how they handle you will, I think, demonstrate to members exactly what's going on behind the scenes of the federal party. We've not had a leadership race in a while, and even the last one was controversial, had issues surrounding it. So, there's definitely no argument they need rejuvenation, and this could do it.
Yeah, I'm going to put everything that happens will be totally in the public. So, you know, they come up.
Oh, I know. With you, I know.
I'm not going to, like, you know, there's no backroom deal I don't have some, you know, their leverage over me. I mean, their leverage to block me running obviously is significant, but their leverage in other ways is, you know, I'm not in a position so I'll be completely open and frank with everyone about this. And obviously the aim, you know, there's a one in a million shot at winning. So you know, the major failure is not being able to stop the killing in Gaza. But I in some ways, I think we've done a fairly poor job of politicizing the popular uprising against Canada's complicity in the horrors in Gaza. We haven't really. You know, I think probably there's lots of people who now are more critical of Canadian foreign policy, but I don't know that we've done a very good job of broadening the challenge to the status quo, broadening the challenge to imperialism, broadening the challenge to capitalism. And I don't know that, and I'd say that even for myself, like I have mostly just focused on, you know, Canada's complicity in Gaza. I've obviously written about other issues and talked about other issues and gone to demos about other issues, but it's been, a lot of it has been pretty narrow. And in fact, in launching this, I've kind of gone putting forward that we need an alternative to capitalism. We need to, you know, we need economic democracy. We need challenges, you know, radical decolonization and sort of broadening. And so I would hope if there is ability to have this campaign move forward, maybe that can play some small role in taking people who've been appalled, who've taken action on Gaza, also to get maybe broaden their you know, questioning of most obviously Canadian foreign policy, but also imperialism and capitalism. So that can be, you know, hopefully would be a contribute in some way potentially to that kind of broadening.
Yeah, I think had the NDP from the beginning been on point where their members stood, right, like which had been clear in a previous vote at convention, and worked with the movement rather than essentially distancing themselves from it at the beginning, right? Like Jagmeet was all over calling the Mount Sinai, the march past Mount Sinai, anti-Semitic, and progressive politicians, yeah, almost were trying to play that center road the entire time and still are, right? The most of the language is centered around ceasefire, not an end to the occupation. And there's no talk of Palestinian resistance being legitimate. And there's lots of boundaries they didn't bother pushing when they would have been the only ones to push it. I have no doubt that would have helped popularize it, right? Because the idea is to have social movements work alongside political movements. And labor would have helped. There's I know your focus is on maybe economics and foreign policy, but when I told folks I was going to sit down with you and that they might have questions for you, many folks been terribly disappointed with the NDP's policy on disability rights and disability supports and frankly disabled people in general. I mean terrible. And I think like a lot of social movements and labor movements have really left disabled people out of it. Like it's almost like a non-entity. Like they just see it as some marginalized group to create a policy around and not one to engage politically. Can you speak to how you would possibly do that different and how, I mean, like one of the examples is the UN has been very clear that we are beyond horrible to disabled people. Like we are practicing a form of eugenics. We're offering MAID. We are like disability supports our legislated poverty. And the progressive wing of Canadian politics has really not taken up this cause at all.
I mean, I think, you know, I would fall into what you're saying in terms of it's not, I'll be honest, it's not an issue that I've been, you know, thinking about much or engaged with, active with. There are, you know, many different issues I've been, you know, go to demonstrations around and stuff like that. This isn't one. And you know, obviously, with regards to the MAID question, I support the notion of medical assisted dying. I know that there's a whole, I mean, things have got to the point where there's, you know, talk about basically being eugenics against disabled people because, and even the UN has criticized Canada on that front. But, and the obvious side of the you know the social entitlement side of, well, if people don't have the means to survive, then life becomes really miserable, and then there's people who may want to turn to MAID, and so it becomes this sort of I would say progressive side of the having people have the ability or the autonomy to make that request to die, then meshes with sort of neoliberalism and a way to not provide what people need. And obviously what people need goes you know beyond just like okay well you need a you know a house or you need a place to live and you need groceries and all that stuff but also you need you know in care
supports right various supports. It's actually more expensive to be disabled, like any disabled person can tell you. Your glasses are just one example that most people wouldn't think of, but yeah.
So the plan here is as we move forward with the campaign is to have a detailed policy. I am a policy type of person. There are areas where I've gotten
that might be fun for you. It's a break from your usual gig.
So the idea here is to actually have very detailed policies on these issues, and obviously the way you know is to turn to those who've been campaigning and the social movements that who've been articulating the policies and trying to you know basically you know adopt theirs or amplify theirs or whatever you know how to frame it like. And that goes with a lot of domestic issues, which I have, you know, I've followed a little bit, but I'm not an expert. And my inclination is also it's not about like platitudes or about just sort of, you know, talking points. I do want to, you know, get like really sort of detailed kind of thinking on different specific issues. I'm not in a position right now to be...
I'm grilling you on policy items and you just announced your candidacy. Like it's fair enough. Fair. It's like I said before, like people are really excited and I'll be honest, like I'm on the fence. I'm excited because I want to see it and I want to report on it. Like I'm just going to totally open book. I want to see what they're going to do and I want to be able to help boost it, right? Because I think it will demonstrate to people honestly, the futility of the establishment. Eves, I think I'm worried that in this moment here, folks are going to start signing up to be members and they're going to get hurt again, right? Like they idolize you in a way. Like I don't want to say that in it. Like I know that probably makes you feel uncomfortable and it might even make some audience members feel uncomfortable. Like, I don't mean it in this unquestionable, uncritical way, but it's like we're looking for hope in anywhere right now. And Canadian politics is so void of it. And when I talk about disabled people, that's one group in particular where, like, getting out of legislated poverty is, like, only going to seems to be happening by policy, right? There's mutual aid that can happen, but quite literally, they, like, live or die off of the government being in power that can save them, okay? Like, it sounds paternalistic, but, and there's so many others, right, that have been going to politicians for years and have lost all hope. But what if they see it in you? They take out all kinds of memberships. They invest themselves in this party and it doesn't work out. Will you encourage those folks to stay in the party? Or, like, do you think there's room for reform beyond, you know, you as a leader?
Some people might not. I'm a little bit of a less bad person in politics. I've said this many times that I'm prepared to vote to defeat people in ridings, right? If I was in like a, I don't know, if there was a close race and I was in a Poiliev riding and it was only the Liberal could defeat, I might make that vote. I don't happen to be in that. I happen to be in a riding where it's the other way around, where it's, you know, I vote, last election I voted for the NDP against Guilbeault and I previously voted for a far left party and, you know, whatever, Communist Party, whatever. But I think that the world is as it is. What I can say is I'm not going to not be honest and clear about what happens and how I see things, however they, whether they block me, they call me in 2 hours and say, no, you can't run, or a week from now, or they put $100,000 barrier to try to participate in the race. I'll be honest. And I'm not going to, irrespective of what happens, I'm going to continue to challenge the NDP's sellout on NATO, on Palestine, on...
There's a laundry list. It's okay.
To have a realistic impact on the race, there needs to be dozens of people who are willing to support in volunteer capacity of, you know, all the different things that needed to be done to amplify the message. And then there is going to be a need to have a 1,000 or 2,000 or, you know, a couple thousand people that take out memberships to at minimum demonstrate to, is it going to be Avi Lewis, Leah Gazan, whoever is supposed to be the more sort of left side of the, a bit more of the officialdom. And to show that there's actually
a race.
Yeah, there's actual race and people are pushing, you know, the it's not just like, you know, some random dude making some comments about economic democracy, about, you know, maybe we should talk about withdrawing from NATO, but there's actually some people who really want those ideas and you know, and sort of pull the debate to the left. I think there does need to be that. And obviously, you know, in the context of having the possibility of winning, you would need, you know, tens of thousands of people to become members. So I don't really see getting around that, but I'm certainly not, committed to the NDP, for forever or in any way asking anybody, to commit in that way. I don't know if that sort of mostly answers the question, but yeah.
Well, it does. And for folks listening who are thinking about taking out a membership, like, it has to be Eve that signs you up. So he has to be approved as a candidate. So I think finding out how you can start to shape up his campaign, getting, like, is there a way for folks to get in touch with you? Because, like, more than one person replied with, you know, they didn't have a policy question. They weren't going to throw you any hardballs. They just want to know how they can help. They are already on board and want to know how they can volunteer or contribute. So have you been able to set up any way to onboard people yet? Or?
Yeah, we're slowly here. The Socialist Caucus has a meeting on the 13th that's going to do more on... There was a first at the first meeting. There was some setting up of you know, people responsible for different things that need to be done on the campaign, And I think at this point, the best thing would probably just to email me, which just my email, and I'll pass it around. Or if people can make it to the 13th meeting, I don't actually remember the exact time of that meeting, but I can forward that. And so, yeah, we definitely need people to, to take on different, whatever expertise people have to take on different tasks for that stuff. And I agreed with him in terms of the we haven't asked anyone to purchase memberships at this point or to become members, because that all needs to be kind of ironed out with the logistic question.
It sounds like to me, if I may humbly suggest, the first thing you need is a campaign manager. Do you have one yet?
Well, yeah, we have the interim, Barry's interim in that position. And, but if you, know anyone who, I have an idea of somebody else, I mean, short term, but if you have any ideas for somebody, then, we'd be happy to,
yes, we will talk about that. Yeah. Cause I'm not going to give out your email, Eve. Like, I don't know how many people just bombard you. You have other things, and I will definitely find a link to the meeting for the Socialist Caucus, and we'll include that in the show notes so people listening can at first kind of step in there and give you a little bit of breathing space. So maybe there's another email that someone else can man for you or can cover for you for a moment, because yeah, I don't want to overwhelm you at this stage. There's kind of other steps that you've clearly got to work out first and get in touch with the party. Because, they've not even officially announced there is a leadership race. I mean, it's implied. Don Davies is in there right now. He's kind of real vanilla. He's not going to stir the pot right now. Let's say you said 1 in 1,000,000 chances. I don't know how to work those out. Let's say you do. And what do we got? 7 seats. We'll get you a seat. All right. Let's say we get 8. Do you think you could make an impact on Canadian foreign policy? Just for one example, or NATO, if you want to be even more specific, with your energy there?
I do. I certainly do. I certainly think on foreign policy. I think there's no doubt about that in terms of being, both just in the terms of substance and highlighting issues that are just not being highlighted, and also let's call it tactical in the sense of a willingness to be disruptive in a political sense, in whatever method of articulating the issue, right? And whether that's getting arrested for something or those kind of things, the nature of the position would have a curtailing impact on the sort of ability to just be a lone whatever, if you want to call it that. But so I would concede to that to a certain extent. And if you're in that position, you're not just representing yourself. Like right now, I'm basically just, well, certainly outside of this campaigning, I'm just representing myself. And even in this campaign, I'm just mostly just representing kind of myself, obviously in alignment with the Socialist Caucus and everyone who volunteers and may volunteer, but I feel like I don't feel kind of like constrained by some votes. I do think if you're going to be in the position, you do have to obviously respect membership votes, right? So you can't just go into the position of leader of the NDP and just be like, well, there's no party policy on all kinds of issues, and whatever your personal position is, it becomes a position. So I in that position, I would respect the sort of that stuff much more than in the effort to get there. But in the position, I have no doubt that on foreign policy issues, I think more generally, we have the climate crisis is just, it's out of control, what we're seeing. And we literally, the Globe and Mail report on business, we're going to get to 4.7 million barrels a day of tar sands oil.
And Heather McPherson supports pipelines.
Of course, this is obviously this needs to be phased out or shuttered in you know, is it 2 years? Is it 5 years? Is it like there has to be someone who is saying that in a direct sense. I understand. I worked at the Communications Energy Paperworkers Union where they represented a bunch of the Suncor people. And I get that the here and now of the real world is not as simple as, okay, we just got to phase it out and then, you know, it all happens. I get that, obviously. But you have to be able to at least articulate the basics of like the you know scientific consensus on stuff like that. And there's just like no one even willing to like state that in the political arena. Would it lead to a huge backlash? Does it have electoral costs in certain sense in short term, maybe? I mean, they're at seven seats right now. I mean, right? So like the Jagmeet Singh like really, you know, following the establishment, kind of following what the media wants kind of way. You know, led to seven seats. So there's a lot of people who you know, they understand that there's some big problems with capitalism. They understand that the notion of like billionaires, I mean, it's completely odious. It's obviously totally inequality, but it's also just a complete threat to democracy. Like, how can you believe that you live in a democracy when there's people who have billions and get to decide so much of economic life, and then there's others who, you know, making $16 an hour, right? Like, I think there's a lot of concern about these issues out there, and you know, is it easy to articulate that? Do people have all kinds of confused ideas about all kinds of different issues? Of course, but I think there's no doubt that there is a crying need for pushing on some of these issues, and specifically on the foreign policy issues. I really do believe that there would be, you know, many different ways of impacting a discussion that's completely closed off right now.
Well, especially if you're willing to be a little bit more disruptive, because that's been one of my main issues, even once the NDP got to a better position. I'm not going to even say the right position, because like you mentioned, there's still issues with that, but it was the bare minimum. It was like, just stand up in the legislature. I mean, not even once did they use this mailing list they have, these millions in donations that they've taken, and the platform that they have in the House and in front of all these mics. Did they call people into the streets? Like, never, for nothing, almost. Like, it doesn't seem to matter what level of crisis we're in. They're still only ever willing to ask you to sign a petition or donate. And their politicians really should all be in jail at this point, not because they're criminals, but because they've tried everything possible within the House and been reprimanded for it and been trespassed or whatever. I mean, they've been elected to positions of power during a fucking genocide, and we're supposed to pat them on the back because they wore a pin into the House. Whether or not, you know, you could win a vote or sway a vote, I get it. It's really not the be-all, end-all. And even influencing the liberal position on foreign policy or participation in NATO, I mean, being provided with an alternate position is a starting point. But I think the biggest value you would have, or someone like you in that position, is the willingness and the ability to get people to get out into the streets, to be disruptive, to try avenues that were previously closed off to them, right? To not follow the rules, perhaps. Do you know what I mean? To rebel. We need revolution, and we need people to know that they don't have to work within all these really confined systems in the exact way they were designed. I expect if you do get into this institution that is such a problem, not just the NDP, but Canadian politics, that, you know, you're the kind of person that'd be willing to completely shake it up and not be worried about the personal repercussions, the career-ending manifestations that play into most politicians' minds, right? They always check themselves. They're always, is this popular? Is this okay with the party line? You know, I mean, the consultants, not the policy book. And they're always second-guessing themselves. But even, I mean, I'm sure you think things through. I'm not saying you're just like off on a whim, but you surely don't worry about these things all that much, right? Like, will the Zionists have something to say about me if I say this? I mean, you're already there. You're already in the weeds. So I think that holds a lot of promise, a more rebellious form of politics that, you know, because the way it's done now really doesn't, it's not moving the needle. Even if you had a good leader doing it that way, I'm hoping to see you shake it up a little bit. I mean, I appreciate you taking the time to do it. I know you're doing it for a purpose and not for personal gain, because if you thought you had a target on yourself already, you know, you're going to increase it, right? You've already said, you know, the Israeli lobby, the Zionist lobby is already gearing up to kind of smear you. I hope we don't see the same come from within the NDP establishment, but time will tell. Let's say Abby Lewis runs against you. You said you're going to go up against Heather McPherson and a lot of her positions. You've even outlined them. What if Abby Lewis is your opponent? Will you go after him?
Yeah, of course.
All right.
Well, I mean, go after in the sense, like I mean, I've written about Stephen Lewis and Michelle Landsberg's anti-Palestinian policy.
But they've come around, Eve. Just in time.
Yeah. So, you know, I can tell you that I sponsored a public letter around the NDP withdrawing from the Canada-Israel Interparliamentary Group. And I, you know, had Naomi's and I had Avi's emails, and you'll find that their names are not on that a couple of years ago, right? So you know, I totally believe that Avi is not going to, you know, he's clearly better than Heather McPherson. I would prefer Avi in that position than Heather McPherson. But I also don't think that he's come out on Canadian military. You know, he's maybe been substantially better. And I do believe personally him and Naomi, of course, are much better on Palestine than NDP has been for, you know, many years. So I think that is genuine. And you have to also respect, you know, if your parents are a certain way and you go in a different way, you have to also, you know, respect that. But I do think on the military question, that's not something that he will push. And I, you know, will push that and just in foreign policy generally. I don't think that there's a basically alignment with the Washington-led geopolitical outlook that is leading to this huge increase in military spending. So I think that would be, you know, a quote unquote vulnerability, if you want to frame it like that, from a left perspective. But having said that, and I'm not, you know, I'm going to be respectful but clear in my criticisms on policy issues. Having said that, like if there was a scenario where they did allow me to run and there was momentum behind it and it got to the point where it was like, you know, like Avi is the only one that really has a chance of defeating Heather McPherson or whoever else is maybe more of the establishment, it, you know, those questions would arise, right? And I don't know my exact answer to those questions right now, but I would go back to the idea that I am a less, you know, less bad. I think there is this sort of real world of how things are, and do we, you know, I said this about in 2017. I joined to vote for Nikki Ashton, and I asked, it didn't campaign in a significant way, but I asked people to a certain network of, you know, emailed people saying you should register to vote for Nikki Ashton because Nikki Ashton, it, to my mind, was, you know, substantively better than the rest. But I did that even though I had early in the campaign, I asked Nikki about at an event here in Montreal about whether she voted for the 2011 bombing of Libya. And her answer was a fascinating answer. And I'm still not sure if it's worse what she said to me to have said she just voted for it. And she said she didn't remember if she was in the House when the vote happened. So we know that the NDP voted for two different bombings of Libya in 2011, which 14 years later is a complete, utter disaster. And she didn't, she answered by saying she didn't remember, like, so like you literally, there was a vote to destroy a country and your response, and I don't know if it was an honest response or not, was to say you don't remember whether you had voted to destroy that country or not, or whether you had stepped out. And she was kind of implying that she wasn't on board for it. And she was, you know, whatever, she'd been pressured by Layton and whatever. And I get that's a dynamic that exists within the caucus and whatever. Even after she made that, told me that, which I wrote about, you know, right away. I didn't hide that. I still, you know, not, again, not, I didn't spend a lot of energy, but I did campaign for her because it is what it is, right? I think it's better to have a less bad or, you know.
Please don't make that your campaign slogan, though. You've repeated it. Do not make posters with, say, I am the less bad candidate. We've got to come up with something else.
I won't state that in other public forum, but you get the basic point.
I absolutely do. NDP voters know exactly about picking the lesser evil, Eve. I mean, they know all about it. All about
so,
it.
So yeah, I mean, anyway, so I just, to me, it's a matter of being like, it's about being, you know, honest and open about, you know, if there's some form of concession, there has to be an honest opening. I mean, I said this about, I'll take this point a little bit further. I said this about when I worked the Communications Energy Papers Workers Union, which became Unifor. I was there for about like 2.5 years, 2012, 2014 region. And one of the things that really struck me is that, like, I don't have a problem. Like, just as a concrete, I was working in research, but I did basically a lot of communications. I wrote op-eds for the president of the union, stuff like that, press releases. I don't have a problem if someone says to me, okay, the Globe and Mail is not going to take an anti-capitalist position, an anti-capitalist op-ed, but they'll take something that says, you know, we have some lack of democracy in the economic sphere. Or, you know, they'll take something sort of wishy-washy. I don't have a problem with someone who writes that op-ed for the Globe and Mail knowing that's the best I can get out of that context. But then on your own website, on your own, where you do have the ability, on your own, you know, conference, your own speech, whatever, where you do have the ability to say, hey, we need to replace capitalism, that you do, you know, you concede there, but then you push there. And because it's part of like a bigger project of where, you know, we're trying to consciousness raise, we're trying to build, we're trying to move forward. So that to me is like, you know, there is institutional realities, there is the stuff like that, but you push whatever you can within that, and then you continue with the, you know, what you really believe, if you like, in the alternative kind of areas. So I don't know if that's the, you know, a total answer to it, but yes, and back to the specific, I will definitely challenge Leah Gazan or Avi on, who I understand are the two likely kind of more left-wing candidates. I will challenge them on where I see that they are, you know, conceding, or they're not going far enough, or whatnot.
Good luck. I do anticipate that they will give you a hard time, but your hope does lie in working that federal council and the executive to make sure the rules aren't just implicitly made to make it almost impossible for you. Like I said, around length of membership or whatnot, that would discount you right away. But once those rules are set and the race starts, there surely will be more to talk about. But yeah, very exciting times, especially in a time where nobody was really talking about the NDP. You've got them all talking about the NDP again. You fucking got me talking about the damn party again. I try not to. I try to just walk away. But you draw me back in. You're going to draw some of my comrades back in. I know it. But
I apologize for that.
It's all for a good cause. I do understand the practicality of trying to work these institutions. It's not for me right now because I just had such a bad taste in my mouth. I just feel my energy is somewhere else. But I do appreciate that comrades are still willing to wade in there and provide an alternative, even just to show people there another part of the Overton window we don't very often get to see, that doesn't get a lot of exposure. It's saved for, you know, left-wing parties that aren't even invited to debate. So I would love to see you get up there and debate Heather McPherson or anybody else, but particularly the establishment favorite. If that happens, I'd love to have a conversation with you beforehand, because, we've got lots of dirt on McPherson. Not a good choice for most folks. But Eve, I appreciate you coming in really last minute, too. Once I saw that announcement, I had a lot of questions for you, and then the audience came up with some questions for you. And be prepared to be pushed on disability rights, though. And to come up with a policy that's written by disabled people that takes into account the abject failures. That is my advice, because you could really rally a lot of people that are really eager for something different. Yeah. So good luck, Eve. Get out there. Keep us all informed on what's happening. I know you got to start a blog. Like, that's just really my navigating this craziness that will become the NDP leadership race. Any parting words? You're on the campaign trail now, kind of, you know, that's unusual for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, for most of this audience, is keep doing what you're doing and you know, lots of different ways, of course, to, this electoral element is kind of new to me, but yeah, keep doing what people are doing. And, you know, if things move forward in the positive way, you know, if people do want to both assist with the campaign and then, you know, choose to become a member for a short period or for a long period to oppose, to, you know, to vote for, that's obviously, you know, much appreciated. And, but yeah, mostly just keep doing what people are doing.
Keep doing what you're doing. I know this isn't going to suck up all your energy. You've got more than that to spare. And good luck with any upcoming court cases. I forgot to mention that at the beginning. That was your last episode on here, was getting pulled in by Montreal cops for, you know, tweeting. So I can only imagine what the vetting, how the vetting team looks upon that. But we shall see. We shall see. They're going to have a chuckle. And they're probably very nervous about you announcing, which brings me joy, that you're making the establishment nervous no matter what happens, and that the Zios are really agitated and wasting their energy there. So if nothing else, right? If nothing else, we make them uncomfortable. Thank you so much, Eve.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
That is a wrap on another episode of Blueprints of Disruption. Thank you for joining us. Blueprints of Disruption is an independent production operated cooperatively. You can follow us on Twitter at BP of Disruption. If you'd like to help us continue disrupting the status quo, please share our content. And if you have the means, consider becoming a patron. Not only does our support come from the progressive community, so does our content. So reach out to us and let us know what or who we should be amplifying. So until next time, keep disrupting.